On this week's episode of Loose Cannons, we watch an insulting cash grab called The Swap. Also, we have a retrospective about every single piece of garbage that we've watched up to now. And the good ones, too! Hello, my name's Justin LeClue, and I'm here today with...
Matthew Kumar.
And you're listening to Loose Cannons, the podcast where we go chronologically through the releases of canon films. This week, we watch The Swap, starring Robert De Niro. Now, this film is a little bit special, isn't it, Matthew? Why do you think this movie exists?
This movie exists, as you said in our intro, as kind of a cash grab. So it turns out, I don't know what point actually is that we actually did the previous film starring Robert De Niro, Sam's Song, but that was shot in like 1969.
Yes.
And this was put out in 1979. It's from 10 years later, and Robert De Niro by this point is already a star, basically. In 1979, he's been in Taxi Driver and everything else, right?
Mean Streets, all that stuff.
He's a big guy now, right? Mm. So the person who directed...
Jordan Leondopoulos.
Yeah, who directed Samsung. He wanted to basically get Robert De Niro in another film, or he just was like, you know what? I've got all this footage of Robert De Niro lying around from my crappy student film about a jerky dickhead and his friends going to a house in the Hamptons that was completely meaningless and garbagey. And I'm just going to put it in another film, pretend Robert De Niro's the star, and
have the other film be flashbacks.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a big piece of garbage.
Yeah, that's basically what he decided. Now, to what extent he was put up to this by canon, we don't really know.
And when we say canon, we are talking about Golan and Globus. Because me and Matthew have had a discussion before of when did Golan and Globus, you know, take over canon, make it the canon that we know and love.
Now, I believe that the generally accepted, not just by you, Justin, you think that it's just based off something you said.
Yes.
But I believe, based on my research, that people generally believe that they took control of the whole canon thing with the release of Happy Hooker Goes to Hollywood, right? Which is still a few films away at this point.
Yeah, it's like 10 movies away.
But through our watching of these films and the increasing appearance of Golden Globes Productions, we have to accept that that really can't be true.
And I think the key to this decision that we're making here, that Golden Globe is to control, is the presence of Sybil Danning.
Yes. So we had Sybil Danning in Operation Thunderbolt, obviously.
We had her in God's Gun.
Yep. And then now we have her again in this, in a kind of classic lazy canon film's use of an actress, where she is playing one of the main characters from Sam's Song 10 years later, because that actress had also become a bit more famous. No, she wasn't Robert De Niro level, but she'd become more famous, too famous to be in a crappy cash grab. And so they just were like, replace her with Sybil Danning, because she doesn't look anything like her, but she's blonde, I guess. And the woman from the Samsung wasn't even blonde.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're just gonna... You know what? The people watching this movie are stupid to be here, so we're gonna continue to insult their intelligence.
So if you're kind of wondering why we decided to just kind of do a retrospective of the pre-Golan Globus era at this point, it's because we kind of have to accept that by this point, we're into the Golan Globus years. Mm-hmm. They haven't really got to any of the hot stuff that you would know them from. Like the Apple will come up in like 10 or 15 episodes or something like that. But I think we're definitely in the Golan Globus era by this point.
And the next movie we're watching is a Golan and Globus film. It's The Magician of Lubin. So, you know, they're there, they're in the background. They may be in control, but they haven't pushed all their projects to the forefront yet.
So, for example, the last film that we watched, Incoming Freshman, was an old student film that had been turned into a porno. And I kind of assumed that, because this film is the same situation. Old student-y film turned into new film as a cash grab.
Man, I wish it was a porno. The film is so boring.
There is no nudity in this film, correct?
Nope,
right?
None.
And which is interesting, because they have a diamond opportunity for this movie to have a lot of porn in it, because the main character, sorry, not the main character, who is pretending to be the main character, Robert De Niro, is playing a pornographer.
Yes.
Problematically, I guess, if you want to get a lot of porn in your movie, though, he's playing a child's pornographer. Because our hero, who is the main character in this movie exactly?
I don't know. Sam Spade, imitator, like...
Some guy, basically, who is Sam's brother. He's gotten out of prison after 10 years, never explained why he was in prison in the first place.
Let's say he murdered some children.
Sure. I mean, better than watching them have sex on film, right?
Yeah.
And he's got out and he wants to get revenge for his brother's murder, because the way the film opens is exactly the same as Samsung. Samsung opens with Robin Hood walking through the streets of New York. He gets back into his office. He starts to edit a film, except in Samsung, he's editing like some crappy thing about corn and Nixon, right?
Yeah.
Or peanuts and I don't know. I can't remember what it was about. In this one, when he turns the footage on, you can hear like people having sex. But then a guy comes up behind him, unlike in Samsung, and hits him in the head with a kosh, and he dies, I guess.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to this other guy, and he's like, I want to find out who killed my brother. And he goes on his investigation, and he bumps into this woman who is pretty much the only person who has an interesting sort of side story, I guess, who is Lisa Blunt or
sure.
Blount, I'm yeah. not sure who you.
And when you mean side story, you mean career, not in this movie.
Yes, true. I mean career, in that she would most likely be known to audiences as being in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
She doesn't like stand out in that movie or anything, but she's in it. I very strongly remember her from being in a Robert Powell mid-80s vehicle, What Waits Below.
Ooh, yes. What Waits Below is a screening that me and Matthew saw at the fabled 12-hour cinema marathons that we've talked about.
Yeah, and we have mentioned this film exactly before, because this one played, I think directly before, one of my favorite movies that I recommended in the podcast.
Horror Hospital.
You haven't seen it? You should see it.
And what is it? What Waits Below?
Or What Waits Below.
Is famous for me and Matthew getting yelled at by people for being too loud while the movie was playing.
Because it was boring.
It was so boring.
Nothing happened. You want to talk during your movie marathon of bad movies.
We were not being Mystery Science Theater 3000. We weren't yelling it to the entire audience. We were mostly talking between ourselves.
Yes, it's pretty bad. But she's in it.
Yeah, sure.
So there's that.
Well, we had some good laughs when we saw that movie.
And
unlike fucking this movie, which is shitty.
Yeah, it's true. And basically in this movie, she plays a person who met Robert De Niro as a child. And then Robert De Niro, she does say he didn't want me to be in those movies. He still shot them.
Yeah.
I mean, edited them. And made child porn with her, which is super grimy and gross. And then she falls in love, I guess, with the main character.
Instantly. Detective character. Who is so lame. I cannot put a point on how boring this movie is shot.
This movie's a real Rashomon, let's be honest. Because in this movie, first he goes to see Sybil Danning. And Sybil Danning tells a story of going to the country house with Robert De Niro. She tells all this stuff from her own viewpoint, which takes quite a long time because there's a lot of footage of Robert De Niro. I honestly believed watching this movie, after the opening we saw Robert De Niro get hit in the head, I thought to myself, that's it. We'll never see Robert De Niro again.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow, you trusted this director much more than I did.
No, he was just like, I'm just going to get as much use out of this footage as possible. She explains it from one angle. Then he goes to see the husband.
Who is in both movies.
In both movies. As is...
Because they're like, you know, audiences can't tell women apart, but yeah. Man, woo!
But they do get Carol back as well, the other woman from
that
movie.
Yes, they do.
And he tells his version of the story. So it's a real Rashomon.
Oh, who cares? It's so boring. Can you imagine being the director and editing this? What goes through your head? Are you like, I have a family to feed, and I will do anything to put food in their mouth?
Well, I mean, considering the movie is like 40 minutes of Samsung's footage, and about 40 minutes of new footage, which is cheaply and shittily done. He must have spent like about a week working on this.
Yeah, and probably. I assume not less.
And I assume that in his head, he was like, you know, 10 grand or something. He's like, I'm going to make thousands of dollars from this by selling it for distribution or whatever through Canon. So this is a
payday.
Would
you do that if someone was like, Matthew, I want to do a new podcast, but Justin died in a terrible accident. Will you edit yourself reacting to Justin but having other comments? We will pay you $10,000.
Well, I thought it would be very funny if we just reposted the Samsung podcast, but edited with some new stuff of us in it.
Yeah.
Saying that didn't happen in this version or whatever.
Yeah.
That was going to be a lot of work. So, I mean, yeah, I would continue to...
You do it even if it was like...
Pump your corpse for money.
Like, whoa.
You know, like just continue to podcast with a dead Justin for as long as it requires. Yeah, so, sure, like, for
you
money.
Need, you need to finish those canon, like we need you to finish the canon stuff. So we're gonna recontextualize stuff that Justin said.
Yeah.
But we really want it to be pro America.
Yeah.
Specifically, like,
so we'll just like edit all your words so you sound like you're saying, you know, I love dear leader Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like, something like that.
And I'd be like, do you, Justin? So do I.
You just do it, no problem?
No problem, I don't care. I mean...
You will do anything for money.
Yeah.
If you would like Matthew to do something for money, email us at loosecannonspodcast.
No. PayPal us.
Yeah, PayPal is the money.
At loosecannonspodcast.
We want you to be our paypigs.
Paypigs. No, paypigs pay us and we don't do anything.
Yeah, we want them to be our paypigs.
Yeah, we're not the paypigs to them. They pay us and we don't do anything. That's how paypigs work.
Well, we make loose cannons. Ah. That's what we do.
That's what we do.
We
it's
put
true.
The honey in their ears.
The honey in their ears.
It's I true. Have a really bad throat ache this week, so I'm sorry if I'm
Me
not as enthusiastic
too.
As we usually are. All right, we done with this movie? This movie sucks.
No, there's a couple of things in this movie that are worth pointing out, I think. There's a sequence where he talks about eating mayonnaise and peanut butter sandwiches.
Ugh.
Which I was like, where does this come from? And then Carol's response to that, who is she's trying to... seduce him, I guess, is to ask him, because he was in prison, if he was gay. And he's like, I'll show you how gay I am when I can't remember.
Slap your butt. Yeah, or
take,
like that.
And then she starts to take his pants off, and he goes, I can take my own pants off. Which I thought was very funny, sort of in an awkward way. Then they use all that the footage that of Robert Niro. Remember the slow motion footage of him shooting himself?
Of him shooting himself? But they put like tinkly music over it for it to have even more emotion.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, don't watch this movie, guys. Yeah, don't. Come on, don't watch it.
Then at the end, literally the ending of the movie is, our hero watches the footage. It turns out to be footage of the husband having sex, I guess. It's not clear with who. But my assumption is it's gay sex because at the end, and please excuse my language, our hero meets the bad guy in the bath and says, he calls him a murdering fag.
Ugh.
And then he's like, how much money do you have to stop me revealing this to the world or whatever? And the guy starts to talk, and he just immediately shoots him two times and goes, he didn't have enough money. Which is supposed to, I guess, seem really awesome and cool, but because of the homophobic rant he'd already given, he's kind of not on board.
It kind of sounds like he's very anti-homosexual.
Yeah, he really is.
And he's like, there's no money in the world that would keep me from killing you gays.
Yeah, exactly. And in the end, he's been shot somehow. It's never made clear how he got shot or stabbed earlier on, but they're driving away, him and the woman, the child porn lady, and she's like, you've got to stay alive. And he's like, She's like, I'm just taking to the mountains. There's a hospital there. And he's like, And she's like, and then it ends with her going, I love you. And you're like, why? I don't, why do you love this person? He's homophobic and was in prison for 10 years. And, you
what
know.
What gets you in prison for 10 years in the 70s?
Late child 70s. Porn? I don't know.
Yeah, like murder? Murder is usually about 20, right?
Depends. Did he murder a black guy? It's probably less, right?
Oh, boy. Well, this is a good point to bring up the... I looked the director's name up because all he really directed were The Swap and the original version, Samsung. But he became a teacher. It looks like an English teacher. I won't say what the name of the school is. You can go look on the internet if you want. But there's a website called ratemyprofessor.com. And one comment goes, very sarcastic, some racial jokes, rambling at time management an issue. People really don't like him. I hated this class. He is a tough grader and his quizzes are dumb. He spends all class, this is not even the same poster, talking about race and thinks that he's always right.
Wow.
Like, multiple people brought up his, I mean, does he talk about, like, hating gay people on here or?
Probably.
But you know what? The main character of The Swap is a character. He doesn't represent the views of the director, right?
He might.
You're just going to assume that?
Yeah. I mean, we sort of assumed that Robert De Niro's character in Samsung was him as well.
Oh,
right?
Definitely, yeah.
Someone who believed they were totally like amazing and making amazing movies and were getting screwed over by women or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, it's like he's just, it's only 10 years later and he's angry and bitter and he hates the gays.
And he felt like, you know, he'd rather make this movie than child pornography.
Yeah, I guess so. Actually, maybe that is kind of one of the sort of the themes of this work.
Okay. All right, we're done. We spent way too much time
talking about this. Canon? Nope.
Well, we're going to talk about the canon, and we're going to go through all the movies that we put into it. Matthew went through the long and arduous process of listening to the ends of episodes and writing them down.
Yes.
But before that, we have some letters.
Oh, nice.
Which you can mail us at any time at loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com.
And I'm just going to do the usual spiel I always do. Please rate us highly on iTunes and write us reviews because it really helps us out. I'm not going to belabor that point, but you really should.
No jokes, no threats, no.
No, just do it. Come on.
Please.
Please.
Please clap.
Please. Yeah, please clap.
All right. So, Ian Adams sends us a message with no status, with no subject line. Okay. It went straight to my spam box.
Nice.
And it goes, so first, apologies for being months behind. Too many babies. Has he had babies?
Yes.
Is he eating babies?
It's true. He's very fat from all the babies he eats.
Makes it hard to type. Do you know Ian Adams?
Makes it hard to type.
Okay, so you know who this is?
Yes.
You're just not assuming
he loves
this person is fat.
He loves eating babies.
He wrote, anyway, assuming this hasn't been covered, it's Mako, long A. So he's referencing Mako, the Joss Patel.
Yeah, Mako, the Joss Patel. What's your point, caller?
Yeah, Mako. I don't understand what that is. Which was a movie about a man and his love for a shark that did not make it into the canon.
No, yeah. Well, who cares?
And he writes, I'm glad this wasn't an upsetting movie about sexual assault. Bye. So that is an email.
Uh-huh.
And then he wrote, Mako, the Jaws of Death again. Oh, never mind. Just got the part with the sexual assault. So for people that don't remember, Mako, the Jaws of Death also features a scene of men assaulting women, which we haven't seen in a while.
We haven't seen that in a while. And worth noting that the sexual assault is done by Oddjob.
Yes, from, that's right.
The James Bond movies.
And then he writes a third email. He goes, Jaws the novel came out in 74. So the movie, Mako the Jaws of Death, was probably ripping off the hit novel, not the mega hit film.
Was the novel a hit?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I'm not going to do any research on that, are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, no, I don't care.
Also, fuck Zack Snyder. I guess. Who's Zack Snyder?
We made sure to exhaust all of our Batman vs. Superman talk before the podcast.
There is nothing we can say about Batman vs. Superman that the listener hasn't heard.
Yeah, exactly.
In a million other places.
So, yeah, Zack Snyder is bad. We all agree.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, retrospective. Let's jump in the time machine, go back to a time when we hadn't watched 40-something canon
so
films.
So we're now at episode 42, I believe.
That's
this
right.
This is episode 42. We picked this because, of course, that number of episodes is the meaning of life.
Yep.
And we have reached the point where we now truly understand the meaning of life, having watched 42 shitty canon films.
Do you feel like you have a better hold on the distributor pre-Golan and Globus?
Yeah, I think I do. And actually, one of the things that's worth pointing out, although we are episode 42, we have done 4 specials.
Yes.
So we've actually done 46 episodes.
So we are past the anniversary, probably, of starting this podcast.
Yeah, way past it.
Yeah.
So in 46 episodes, I'm going to point out we have done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We have 9 films in the canon. One of which is pretty much a cheat because it's not pre-Golan and Globus era. Right?
Yeah, so really 8 films in the canon.
Really 8 films. 8 out of 42? I'm going to say that actually seems pretty good, actually.
Oh, really? I was going to say that's a failing grade.
But I think like for this period to have that many films that are like worth including in the conversation when you talk about canon films.
So, first off, we put Inga in the canon.
Inga went in.
A Joe Sarno film about, I don't even remember.
All Joe Sarno films are about sexy young woman goes to live with a relative who's an old, past a hag. She's like 30, so she's way past it. And fucks her life up. Real bad.
Yep, and that was a movie. We were young and innocent talking about these movies. We assumed every second film would go in the canon.
We did assume that.
We knew so little at the time.
We did.
After that, Joe. Great movie.
Well, wait. Are we not going to slightly discuss these movies before we move on? Like, in our retrospect?
All the movies?
Yeah, let's just go through them a little bit.
Okay.
I'm not going to, like, talk about it at length. I'm just going to say that Inga as we've come this far, are we still feeling good about it in the canon canon?
Yes, I'm good about it.
Yeah, because Joe Saren was a big important factor of the early days of canon.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of films involved. I have since learned that many people sort of love and appreciate the work of Joe Saren, including filmmaker Nicholas Winding Refn.
Even though he was a jerk to you at the time.
All those people are insane.
Yeah.
And wrong. Inga is definitely, of all the Joe Saren movies, the most watchable one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to watch a Joe Saren film, it's the one you got to watch, I think.
Didn't we enjoy one more than that? To Ingrid, My Love, Lisa? Or The Love Rebellion, which were
I don't think we liked them more. We think overall, that's the strongest one.
Okay, yeah, Inga.
Yeah, Inga. So that's the one you watch.
Mm-hmm.
But then we hit, as you say, we hit one of the best, probably the best
movie that we watched.
Movie that we've seen so far. Straight away, we were really excited. We hit Joe.
Yes.
Made by
John G. Avildsen.
John G. Avildsen. Or Alvidson, I can't remember.
Something like that. Starts with
and it's actually genuinely very good. A vigilante film starring, God.
Peter Boyle.
Peter Boyle, mm-hmm. Yep. A real blue collar worker.
Yeah, right wing kind of guy.
Right wing, racist, and he hates hippies. And he meets another guy who sort of accidentally murders a hippie who's dating his daughter. And it culminates in bloody vigilante action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's genuinely amazing. A real snapshot of life in the 70s at that point in time. It still has a lot to tell us today. And it is easily the most highly recommended films you can recommend. If you watch one film,
yeah,
it's going to be that
so
one.
We saw this movie very early in our
life. It's like episode 4 or something.
So we were like, there's going to be more gems like this, isn't there?
And then we start to get pretty raw.
Yeah.
Because the next film that we enter in the canon, now this one is the most controversial
yes.
entry. We swithered on this multiple times, whether it goes in, whether it goes out, and it is The Wicked Die Slow, I think in 1968.
Yeah, and your logic was that there's probably not that many movies like this that exist in the world, which are rape-filled westerns.
Yes, it's a disgusting, horrible exploitation Western, a true, true video nasty, and probably the first video nasty style of film that canon will put out.
Yeah.
They're gonna put some more out, I think. But it's just disgusting, unwatchable,
you know,
garbage.
Thinking back, I remember we had a lot of laughs talking about that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, we were young. We were basically babies.
We were babies. We were going to be like, the cinematic world is in front of us and there's so much to discover.
That's the episode where I was like, we should have a trigger warning. And then we started to realize that because of the amount of canon films we're going to talk about, there's no point.
Yeah.
If you listen to the podcast already, you accept that paired episodes, you're going to hear us talk about a woman getting sexually assaulted.
Yes.
It just happens so much in The Wicked Die Slow
mm-hmm.
that it's a real grinder. There's some funny stuff in that movie.
There's some really funny stuff.
Like the fact where the two heroes rescue the old man and his daughter, and then the old man's like, you should have sex with my daughter, Derek.
And then we thought for a moment, they're like, they're not going to have sex with the old man, are they?
Yeah, but they also keep cutting to the horse, remember, during the sex scene?
That's right.
If you're a bad person, that movie's...
Oh, that's right, because I said, they're going to have sex with the horse
yeah.
now? Like,
if you're a bad person, there are funny parts of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a movie...
Movie that portrays Native Americans as snarling, pus-filled monsters.
Once again, we've talked about the canon kind of about... Now, the question is, are these movies that you're supposed to watch? And on one level, yes and no. We're just going to talk about... We're talking about these movies in terms of movies that are important to the canon story. And I think that Wicked Die Slow, hard to recommend unless you're a bad person who likes bad things.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's important to the canon story, I think. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is, I think, definitely super important, but also kind of unwatchable. It's Made in Sweden.
Man, the woman in that movie has giant breasts.
And they're amazing looking. Super good.
And if you watch it, you're going to see it a lot.
Yeah, you're going to see them a lot. I mean, it's not like in a way where you really, like, enjoy them or anything. You're
yeah.
just like, those are good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are tip-top. You know, like, they're kind of like, you want to put a little rosetta that says, like, A+, right on one of the boobs.
Yeah.
And that would be nice.
So the movie, the reason it got in the canon is that they're imitating Joe Sarno, and it is a canon film production. So it's like them putting money, instead of just buying films and releasing them, them producing their own stuff.
Because one of the things I didn't mention is that Inga was a huge hit for canon. It's really the movie that launched canon. simply because it was like a sexy sexploitation movie with Swedish people in it, right? Mm-hmm. And then so obviously they went back to Sweden and just ripped off Joe Sarno to try and recreate that success. And they actually did, right? Made in Sweden was a big success for them as well.
Yeah, I believe so.
And that kind of sets the tone for what we'll now think of canon as being when we reach these 80s Golden Globus films, yeah. Where it's just like they make a film or they rip off another film that was successful and hopefully make a lot of money from it. The problem is that, as we all know, that started to stop working for them.
We were so innocent because we were barely 10 films in and we already put 5 things in the canon.
But these are all strong.
Yes. Well, strong in the way that they have historical value.
And then we hit. Now, we talked about The Wicked Die Slow negatively, right?
Yeah.
But this movie is
Goodbye, Uncle Tom.
Just indefensible. We talked about it at length on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But
Good episode.
Yeah, if we don't say so ourselves. But it's a movie about... the way I'll explain it is our friends, Zanetti, or whatever his name is. What was his name? The name of the guy?
Oh, the guy who directed it?
Yeah.
I don't know. The guys who made Mondo Cane.
The Mondo... What are those movies called?
They're called just Mondo movies.
Mondo movies, basically the Mondo documentaries. They previously made a film called...
Africa Blood and Guts.
Africa Blood and Guts, where they went to Africa and showed all like... fucked up shit that happened because of colonization.
And supposedly they actually staged an execution for their cameras.
And they got a lot of bad press from that. And the American journalists such as, I think, Roger Ebert and Pauline Kael were really offended by it. And the directors were so offended by that, they went to America and made Goodbye, Uncle Tom, which is just basically...
They did
like,
not make it in America.
No, they didn't make it in America. They made it in Haiti.
Yes.
And... But they made it about American slavery as basically a fuck you to America. She says like, oh, you think that movie made was so bad in Africa so bad? Look at your horrible history. But the problem with that movie is it was made with the help of the dictatorship in Haiti at the time, Baby Dog Duvalier. So they basically have a lot of poor people being made extras and doing really...
Terrible things.
There's really disturbing things in that movie.
But it's beautifully shot.
Yeah,
It has an amazing soundtrack.
It's unwatchable, horrific.
Nothing. You saw it in theaters.
Yes.
Again, didn't you?
I didn't watch all of it. I just came back for the very end because the very end has an amazing song and has awesome, righteous, angry 70s black guy murdering a lot of white people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously speaks to the true code of me. You know, kill whitey, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But up to that point, it's unwatchable, horrific, incitement to racial hatred. And nothing like it has ever existed. Nothing like it should ever exist again. Mm-hmm. And it has to go in by the fact that Canon saw that. And we're like, yeah, let's make a lot of money showing this.
Yep. And then the next movie, The Lady in Red Kill 7 Times, was a giallo that we just put in because we liked it.
Yep, it's the only giallo, as far as we know, that Canon ever put out.
Yep, they would get into the slasher film territory later on in their filmography, but this is, it's kind of, there was horror movies before this, Blind Man's Bluff, aka, I think it was Crucible of Horror
and
Terror.
Crucible, and then the other Crucible one,
yes.
Cauldron of Blood was the other one.
Yeah, Cauldron of Blood.
Because there was The Corpse, which is Crucible of Terror, and...
Cauldron of Blood, which is Blind Man's Bluff.
Blind Man's Bluff, yeah. Neither of which were particularly recountable. Mm-hmm. I kind of liked... Blind Man's Bluff?
Because it had a kind of 60s pop art feel to some scenes.
But it's not that good.
No, it's not that good.
This one, however, is completely... I mean, it's workmanlike, but enjoyable.
It's really fun. It's actually being released by the company Arrow Films on DVD in a few weeks.
Oh,
so,
really?
There you go, yeah. So people still like it, and they're still putting it out. As opposed to all this other garbage that we've talked about that no one has released in years.
So, you know, we are deep into the canon at this point, and really the only ones we're like, you should see these, is like Joe, Lady in Red's Kill 7 Times. You can watch it.
Yeah, but the next one, Northville Cemetery Massacre.
Also, only really in because it was good.
Yeah, exactly. Because we liked it.
Yeah.
And it was filled with squibs going on.
Oh my god.
Which people have told me they confused with us saying squids. They thought that squids were exploding out of guys.
That is a good idea for the movie.
Oh, just squids exploding out of people?
Yeah, squids.
Yeah, everybody loves squids.
Northville
Cemetery Massacre being a biker film that is not as exploitative as you think it would, but...
It was
good
shot,
movie.
Yeah, shot with real bikers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some weird comedy in it, but it's mostly all there for the amazing squid filled ending.
Yes.
Just squid ever. It's like Watchmen out there, full of squids.
Not the movie version. Come on.
And then next, chronologically in canon, not chronologically in terms of how we reviewed them, has to go Operation Thunderbolt.
Yes.
Which we're putting in because it's Mehen and Golan.
Yep.
Shot it. Our podcast in that is very dour and not very funny because...
Dour? Isn't it dour?
True.
Oh, man. I'm correcting your pronunciation.
Very dour.
Oh, it's a magical day, everyone.
Very dour.
Yeah.
A dour?
Dour. Dour. That's how the Scottish people say it.
It might actually be it. I've just gotten so confused by being here.
Who am I anymore?
Yeah, who am I anymore? Who am I? It's a very dour episode where we sort of talk sadly about the reality of the geopolitical situation at the time. Mm-hmm. But basically...
Oh, and a little behind the scenes knowledge about that episode. Me and Matthew were very out of sync on our Skype conversation, so I barely talk because I don't know when to interrupt him.
Ah, that's why that episode is not very good. Basically, it's about the Operation Entebbe by the Israeli government to rescue a bunch of hostages. It's very much a hagiography of the main character, who was a real person, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it stars some classic actors.
Klaus Kinski.
Sybil Danning, of course. But it's not very good or accountable. But it is an important part, one of the first Mehen and Golan film we were able to see. Now, when we talk about the canon at this point as well, we have to mention that there are multiple films we could not get access to.
Well, mostly ones earlier. And a lot of the ones that Mehen and Golan directed himself.
Like Lupo,
and there was another one, wasn't there?
I don't remember.
Lupo specifically, because that one was really early on, and we just couldn't get our hands on it. If you know where to get a copy, email us at loosecannonspodcast.
Yeah, we're always looking for it to see more bad movies that we haven't seen already.
And when we mean bad, we don't mean like, ha, it'll be fun.
It'll be miserable. Yeah, like crying into our cereal bad.
Yeah.
So, and the final film that goes into the canon, huge cheat because it's a Christmas episode, is, of course, Invasion USA.
We can't not put that in the canon, right?
It deserves to go in.
Yep, that's right. Even though we found it pretty boring.
Well, the thing is, I think if you listen to the episode, you'd think that Invasion USA is great.
Yeah.
Because there are so many funny things to talk about in that movie.
People being shot in the crotch.
The way that the bad guys just turn up in a suburb and just blow everybody's houses with a rocket launcher. The whole sequence in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of crappy acting from our friend
Chuck Norris.
I mean... It sounds like a hilarious good time in the movies, and it's not bad by any means. It's just that when you compare it to the true greats of 80s action cinema, it's a bit flat.
Yeah, it's no Sylvester Stallone's over the top.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not, we have seen.
Do people think that we're going to get into canon films and we're going to be like, ah, these suck? Is that what you're worried about? Do you think that's going to happen?
I think that, here's what I think is going to happen is.
Mm-hmm.
I know for sure there's a lot of really weird, funny stuff coming up.
Yes.
Like, there's all those sex movies that they made.
Mm-hmm.
There's weird, like...
Academy Award, like, grabs that they were trying to do.
And there's, you know, crazy fairy tale movies they made. And obviously there's... The problem that I feel is that we're going to hit is... For example, we're going to see one ninja film. We're going to enjoy it. We're going to think it's really funny. We're going to talk about it. But then we hit, like, 12 other ninja films... And I think that they just can't keep up the enjoyment level.
Well, I like to say Enter the Ninja is great. Revenge of the Ninja is great. Ninja 3, The Domination, where a woman gets possessed and it's the Exorcist, is also great.
So, I mean, there we go. But maybe when the rewatch, because it's just happening sometimes, you'll be like, eh, not as good as I remember.
Yeah.
But that is where the canon stands at this point.
Yes.
Right? We have, you know, 8 films from pre Golden Globus era, one from included in that era, and it's not the best hit rate.
No.
But if
you're... Are you worried that when we get into the canon, like, proper, that we're going to be like, well, this one has to go in because it's the first ninja movie that they made?
I mean that's kind of how we worked for a while anyway.
And then we gave up.
Well... Let's be fair. The last movie that we watched that went into the canon was Operation Thunderbolt, right?
Yeah, that's now, right.
Operation Thunderbolt was episode 35. So it's been a good, solid, like, 7 episodes where we've had another one go in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, things looking good, right? Next week, another golden pitcher. Kate Bush is in the soundtrack, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, apparently.
I've never heard of it before, which probably means not good things.
Yeah, but who knows?
Do you say, are you happy? Are you excited that it's going to be? This has been a pretty straight episode. We need to bring the laughs here at the end.
You can't just demand laughs.
I can demand laughs.
No. I think that things are looking up.
You think so? Yeah. You think the sun's coming out?
Yeah, it's like that song, right? You know the one.
No.
The Dee Dee
song. Somebody once told me the world
is gonna owe me. Not the sharpest tool.
Are we gonna sing it all?
Yes, we are. This is now the Smash Mouth podcast for all your smash.
Is that our big smash troll mouth at the end? That, yeah. Like, we turn to the smash.
Every single week, we're just gonna sing the entirety of.
I thought we were gonna go through the Smash Mouth discography, song by song, and talk about an hour for each song.
No. We always start, we're going to talk about another Smash Mouth song. Yeah. We just always end up talking about that. Like, tonight, this week, we're talking about Walking in the Sun. Smash Mouth's follow-up to, what is that song even called? All-Star.
Yeah,
and then we go, actually, let's just talk about All-Star.
I thought that.
Somebody.
I thought that Walking on the Sun was part of the All-Star lyrics, which is why I started singing it.
Did you?
Walking on the Sun.
Isn't All Star in
Mystery Men?
Mystery Men,
yeah,
right?
I think it was written for Mystery Men.
It was written for Mystery Men?
Yeah.
Now, you knew that film was on to a winner when you get Smash Mouth.
Well, I mean, Shrek was filled with Smash Mouth songs, wasn't it?
Just All Star again, I think.
One song again?
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, Shrek will be fondly remembered a decade from now?
Shrek is already... All, like, you know how B movie is like a thing millennials love now?
Yeah.
Shrek has been in that situation for a long time. Right?
It has, yes.
Like, and so is All Star. Like, you've heard
what is it, Neil?
Neil.
He's Lemon Demon is what used to be his name.
And he did
In Mouse Sounds. The name
Mouse Sounds, which is an album just almost entirely of songs mashed up with All Star.
Yeah.
And I actually have ended up with a genuine enjoyment of the song All Star. Like, I don't ironically enjoy it anymore.
Yeah.
I just think that song's amazing.
Why do you think it's amazing?
Because it's so good. Somebody want, like, that start. Like, I mean, that start alone. Like, that start. I mean, that is a that gets the party going off the hook.
So,
man,
when you start a party, you start with All Star.
Yeah.
We're all stars, right?
Yeah, I start with All Star. Then I play all of Mouth Sounds. Then I play All Star again. Then I play Mouth Sounds again, half of it. Then I play All Star again.
When you transition,
then I play the beginning of All Mouth Sounds again. Then I play the end of Mouth Sounds three times.
Wait.
And then I finish with All Star four times in a row.
Wait, what about the other songs that are on that Smash Mouth album?
What? I believe the album is just...
I believe that it's all just remixes of All Star.
Yeah, it's just 12 versions of All Star. Like, imagine if you let's put an album on, right?
Yeah.
Track one, somebody was, and you're like, ugh, next song, somebody, like.
So not even remixes? It,
somebody, just every over and over again.
How do you think, like, you got a new girlfriend and you're like, I made a mix for you, it's just all star. Would you say something?
I really actually genuinely want to give that mixtape to, yeah, every girl I ever go out with now.
That you're like, this really speaks to the heart of who I am.
You know
when
those really carefully made mixtapes?
Like, you put it on tape, so they have to be playing on tape.
It's all, like, wrapped up, and she's like, somebody. She's like, somebody. She's like, fuck's sake. Somebody. Somebody. She's like, and then she firebombs my house.
Do you think she'd be like, he's a funny guy? Or she'd be like, he's mentally ill.
Depends, is she a millennial or not? How young am I dating?
She's
if she's
like,
a millennial,
this is not B-movie related.
She's like, yeah, what song was in B-movie? Probably All Star by Smash Mouth. In fact, I can almost guarantee the lead song from B-movie was Smash Mouth.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And if it's a song by Smash Mouth, it has to be All-Star.
Yeah.
All right.
But the thing is, they probably changed the lyrics for that one, because I'm sure Smash Mouth... Somebody! We have some. I'm not the smartest bee in the shed. No, not the smartest bee in the hive.
How do you think it feels like to be the lead singer of Smash Mouth?
Did you not see that thing where, like, some guy on Twitter could
made him eat a bunch of eggs?
Yeah, made him eat a bunch of eggs. While singing All-Star, I assume.
That's all. It's like a gypsy curse. Wait, I can't say that. That's racially insensitive.
It's like a Romany curse.
So yeah, it's like, he's like, I wish I was an All-Star. They're like, I will make you an All-Star.
Yeah, no, he went to the little tent, you know, when he went, he went, sorry, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
All right.
No, like, okay, but actually, did you see that? I was almost put off Smash Mouth quite sincerely recently, because did you know they're big Hillary bros? They like tweeted at Hillary something like, why would anyone not support you? Get real, or something like that. And I was like, I can't believe they truly are not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Is that from All Star? I think you didn't sing the whole song for me to understand. I like to say that your beginning rendition is so discomforting, and Matthew throws himself in the performance like he's morphing into Shrek. Matthew's currently grabbing his stomach in pain. Somebody once told me.
Anyone listening to this podcast, we're like, okay, so they've just explained the canon, and then he went completely insane.
That's it.
The reason I'm laughing so hard is I have multiple times sang, I'm not the sharpest tool in the set, and then you went, has that lyric in Smash Mouth?
I know this.
I know this. It's Linux.
Or maybe I'm not the sharpest tool in the set. I think that's why Smash Mouth has existed for so long, because they really speak universally about people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so All-Star going in the canon.
I love how I said, let's bring the laughs. And then we just talk about Smash Mouth.
I love how I said, now listening to the Smash Mouth podcast, and it literally has been the Smash Mouth podcast for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, okay, so we're done. So future, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep doing loose cannons. And we appreciate everyone that has listened.
Yeah, I mean, although they probably started deleted the podcast and thrown the MP3 player out the window by this point.
Yeah, probably.
Other than the lead singer of Smash Mouth, who's really into it now.
He searches Smash Mouth. I'm going to have to hashtag it Smash Mouth when we share it.
Hashtag Shrek. Hashtag, you know.
B-movie.
It's B-movie. We got to get those millennials listening, man. Is Jerry Seinfeld in any of the upcoming canon films? I don't think he is.
Wait, aren't we millennials though?
Yeah, we are. We are.
Okay.
We're just on the edge of it, you know? I mean, I'm like just out of Generation Y or whatever, yeah. Just into millennial.
Do you feel death is just around the corner for you?
At all times.
Me too.
But I know when I go, the angels will be singing, somebody.
All right, are we done here?
We're not. We're never done.
We're never done.
We're
so,
never done.
Next week, Magician of Lubin.
We didn't do any recommendations.
Oh, do we have to do recommendations?
Yes.
Now? All right. What are you recommending, Matthew?
I'm recommending Smash Mouth by All Star.
Smash Mouth by All Star. My glasses are fogged up from laughing so hard.
It's even funnier because I got it wrong. So. If you're on this podcast, you...
How did they make it this far? And they're still like, they're going to keep going?
So, if you're listening to this podcast, we really should have done recommendations before we went into the canon.
Yeah.
Because anyone listening has forgotten that the film we're originally doing this podcast about was called The Swap with Robert De Niro.
Mm.
Well, So, we didn't really talk about it, but this movie was an attempt at a hard-boiled kind of neo-noir, mm-hmm. right? And so I wanted to pick something that kind of had that noir feeling, but wasn't really a noir film. So the movie I'm gonna recommend was called The Woman Chaser.
Mm.
It stars Patrick Warburton. It was from, I think, 1999. I forget the name of the director, but it's an amazing adaptation of a novel by...
Charles Williford,
who you would also know from... the film...
Miami Blues. I'm holding your hand through this one. And he also wrote Cockfighter.
Which is not good.
No.
Don't watch Cockfighter. The Woman Chaser, however, is an amazingly wry and funny and clever sort of a noirish movie about this guy who is very full of himself. He runs an
used car dealership,
and he decides he wants to.
Matthew has just. He's completely lost half of his brain. It's true.
I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. Right. And he decides he wants to make a Hollywood film.
Yeah, he decides to make a Hollywood film. He said that he feels that if he's an artist, that would define him and give him purpose to
life.
And
it's kind of about Hollywood, but in a sort of an absurdist fashion.
It's really, really good.
It's really clever. It's really funny. And it's totally forgotten.
It's completely forgotten. I would say it's kind of like if Orson Welles directed a script by Guy Maddin about making movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually kind of what it feels like. It's wonderful. I highly recommend it. It has an amazing joke involving his mother's breasts.
Yes. I forgot we were going to do recommendations. And I actually don't have anything to recommend right now.
So we're going to take a beat.
Wait, no. I know what I'm going to recommend. It's not a noir. But it's a blast of energy right in your face, just like Smash Mouth's All-Star.
True.
It's Chorhark's knockoff, the Van Damme picture that is probably, I called it the 90s Torque. And if you don't know what Torque is, the movie that came out in the 2000s about motorcycle racing, then you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But think of the craziest movie that you have ever seen as far as the way it's directed and the way it's edited and multiply it by 10, and that's knockoff.
Mm-hmm. It's a movie where the director saw every single shot and went, what can we do to make this more interesting? And then did the craziest possible way. Like, this is a movie.
And we should point out that Jean-Claude Van Damme and Rob Schneider star in it as a couple.
Yes.
Because there's nothing that disproves that information in the film.
They're definitely a couple in this movie. And they sort of play a couple of knockoff merchants in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. This is probably one of the truest example of a Hong Kong director coming to America and just making a Hong Kong film.
I don't even think he came to America. But he made it in Hong Kong.
But I mean, he made Double Team in America, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and then he went on to make this right after Double Team. Mm-hmm. And Double Team was the Jean-Claude Van Damme and who's the other guy?
Dennis Rodman
movie. This is right after it. And it's basically, he just was like, fuck it. Went back to Hong Kong, shot a straight up Hong Kong film. Couldn't feel more like, I mean, the...
It's even dubbed.
And every shot is like, he's like, why doesn't the camera go through this television screen? Why doesn't the camera start from behind the wall? Why doesn't the camera, like, chop up everything into sort of little mad moments? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's everything that happens, even the most boring scene, has an interesting thing happening in it.
Now, you may find that numbing and be like, whoa, too much. But unlike, like, the MTV music kind of video editing that was really popular in the early 2000s, this one, it's actually inventive with every shot.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, like, flashes of light or what's called Avid Farts, which is the editing system.
And this is a movie where, if you sort of read up about it, they cut out a lot of action to sort of for the running time. And
you do not miss that.
You don't
action.
Miss it. Yeah. Because you actually, at certain points, you're like, that's a lot of action in this movie. If there's one problem with this movie, it's that there's not really a very strong antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no, like, really amazing fight at the end. There is a good fight at the end, but you don't understand that this guy's the antagonist until, like, the last minute.
Yeah.
Which is kind of problematic. But also, if you watch a lot of Hong Kong movies, you kind of know they make them up as they go along.
Yes.
And this one kind of feels that way. They're like, oh crap, we need an antagonist. This guy'll do. We've seen him in the background. So.
He'll use his glasses as a weapon. Why not?
And it's great. And it's one of those things that really reminds me just how charismatic Jean-Claude Van Damme is and was. Mm-hmm. It's a really good movie. I highly recommend.
All right. And on that note, let's just end this episode. We're long enough. 50 minutes.
Well, we did
a rendition of Smash Mouth.
We went over the past.
Mm-hmm.
We went over the film, The Swap.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
we,
right.
So I really remember it. We did the Smash Mouth period of time. Which should happen every episode from now on.
Nope, not gonna happen.
I think what should happen is in three episodes we should do other lines from All Star.
What happened after somebody once told me?
I don't know, actually. Yeah, that's why I keep mumbling that part of it.
I ate the sharpest tool in the shed.
No, but there's a mumbly part. There's
no,
like,
there's somebody once told me. Oh, no, you're right. The world, like, is gonna
the world, owe me. The world, is it the world is gonna owe me?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, you know what? We will know next week when we tackle that second line.
When we tackle that second line. That's
all right.
True.
My name's Justin LeGlue.
I was Matthew Kumar.
Thanks for listening.
You're an all-star.
Is that your new ending?
Yes.
Okay, then I said, have a good night. Now, what do you usually say?
Night, everybody.
That's right.